Support comes from Pacific Science Center, working to inspire the next generation of scientists and increase access to STEM education statewide through digital discovery workshops, science on wheels, and summer camps. More ways to support these efforts at pacsci.org.
Hey, good morning. It's Paige Browning. It's Thursday. This is Seattle Now. How much should a brand new police officer in Seattle make? It looks like the new starting salary of officers will be in the low six-figure range, thanks to a new union contract with the Seattle Police Officers Guild. The new tentative contract also includes large retroactive raises for current officers and some changes to accountability. Publicola editor and publisher Erica C. Barnett is here to explain what's in it and what it says about Seattle's relationship with its police force. But first, let's get you caught up. Speaking of our police force, Seattle City Council members will meet today to discuss more ways to recruit police and keep current officers on the force. The council and mayor are putting police staffing front and center as they work to tackle public safety. A proposed bill would create a new job position in charge of responding to SPD applicants and create a new office within SPD responsible for retention and recruitment efforts. Birth parents are getting older in Washington state, according to data from the CDC. Axios says Washington's average maternal age was 30.3 last year, higher than the national average. Almost 57% of Washingtonians that gave birth were in their 30s and older. Nearly a quarter of people giving birth were 35 or older. And the Cornish College of Arts is putting the historic Carey Hall on Capitol Hill up for sale. It's the last of the school's Capitol Hill properties as it finalizes a move to South Lake Union. Carey Hall's been in use by Cornish since the college was founded in 1914. That's it for now. Come back tonight for evening headlines. The Seattle Police Department is under a lot of pressure right now. On one hand, they're still under the spotlight of the federal government over officer accountability. On the other, they're struggling to keep enough officers on the force to address public safety issues. A new contract with the Seattle Police Officers Guild might be the place to address both of those problems, and we have our first glimpse of what it might look like. The Guild posted a tentative agreement online last week before taking it down. The city's last contract with rank-and-file officers expired 3 years ago, so this new one's been a long time coming. Publicola editor and publisher Erica C. Barnett is here to tell us what we know about the new contract and how it could change SPD's relationship with the city. Hey, Erica. Thanks for being here.
Hello. Great to be here.
So the Seattle Police Union, nicknamed SPOG, has a tentative agreement with the city of Seattle for a union contract. But this is a retroactive contract. What does that mean exactly?
Well, basically, what it means is that the contract goes from 2021 through 2023, the part that has been agreed on and is going to go before the city council. And so that includes a retroactive pay increase of a total of 23% over those 3 years, which will come in essentially lump sum checks to police officers who were on the force during those years. And then the rest of this four-year contract, which goes through 2024, is reportedly still in mediation. So we don't know a whole lot about that. So retroactive just means it's going back to the point when they last had a contract.
The answer to my next question may be complicated, but I'm wondering if you can help me understand, why are we talking about police salaries for 2021, 2022, and 2023?
Well, because SPOG, you know, has a practice that has been, you know, ongoing for a very long time of adopting contracts, you know, years after they would say they are out of contract, meaning they don't have a contract. So essentially, when you don't adopt a contract at the end of a contract period, you just stay with the old contract. Mm-hmm. And if there would have been raises during that time, you know, it's pretty standard in city contracts for those to be retroactive. The difference with this, I think, is that unlike other city contracts, you know, the coalition of city unions representing 10,000 or more city employees just signed a retroactive contract. Mm-hmm. the raises in this are much, much larger. So 23% is just, it's going to represent a lot of money for the city budget.
Yeah. And right now, Seattle police salaries today are on the lower end for this region, lower than Kent, lower than Bellevue, according to King 5. But you're reporting this would make Seattle police the highest paid in Western Washington. Is this huge jump about retention or something else?
I think it's largely about recruitment. The city has, you know, repeatedly pointed to the fact that the starting salaries are the lowest in the region. Now, I should note that does not include all the other sources of income that many police officers rely on, like secondary employment, like overtime, like working special events and things like that. So we're just talking about a baseline salary. I think what people actually take home is probably more relevant to their day-to-day lives than what their base salary is. But yes, this does bump them up to the top of the region. A starting officer will make about $103,000 after 6 months on the force. And then it keeps going up from there.
Wow. So this is a big bump. New officers right now are making around $83,000 as the starting salary. As you just said, that would bump up to $103,000. But this tentative deal has been criticized for being weak on accountability. What does it do in terms of accountability?
Well, it does very little, but to look at the things that it does do, there are some, I think, improvements in the process for letting officers know they're being investigated, that the Office of Police Accountability had asked for, just a change to the timeline for that. There is, you know, right now, the Office of Police Accountability has 180 days to wrap up its investigations. There's potential to extend that in some cases of very serious use of force. But, you know, I think what is more notable about the tentative contract is what it is just what is not included. And just to take listeners back, there was a contract from 2018 that is now the baseline for this contract. And it did not incorporate a lot of the measures that were adopted into law the previous year in 2017. There was a big police accountability ordinance that was supposed to serve as sort of the baseline for accountability going forward. And so now all the little elements of that ordinance, you know, some of which are you know, quite meaningful and some of which are smaller, are being negotiated like piecemeal, bit by bit. And the Seattle police have not adopted most of them.
And when we're talking about accountability, this is something that a federal judge has said matters as he's reviewing the Seattle Police Department. And in your reporting, you talk about that if an officer is fired now and it's found it could stigmatize the officer, you know, prevent them from future employment, that firing is going to have an elevated standard of review. That is still the case in this deal, correct?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great example of something that was inserted into the 2018 contract. An elevated standard of review doesn't have any legal definition. So it's basically a very vague phrasing that, you know, basically it should be harder to fire an officer if they could have trouble because of that firing getting another job as an officer elsewhere. And, you know, I mean,
I'm trying to imagine that for my job.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, being fired is inherently stigmatizing if you're going to go try to get the same job elsewhere, right? And so accountability advocates say this is the standard makes it virtually impossible to fire officers except in really egregious situations. So that standard is still in there. You know, there's a standard of dishonesty that says that you have to prove that an officer who lied did so intentionally. So you have to somehow demonstrate intentionality. I mean, there's just a lot of things that are protective of officers that are still included in this contract.
But the Seattle police have been under a consent decree from the U.S. Department of Justice since 2012. And as I mentioned, accountability is one of the issues that Judge James Robart, the U.S. district judge overseeing this consent decree, has said the police still need to work on accountability. Is this contract in tension with that consent decree? Would this deal have to be modified?
I think that it is as written in tension with that consent decree, because it really does virtually nothing to increase accountability. I think that what SPOG may say is that they are still working on the accountability aspects of the final contract, which will include 2024. And that, you know, the point of this contract was to get the raises done, because that, you know, was absolutely necessary in order to improve recruitment and retention, and that they'll deal with accountability in the future. I will say, though, that they have said that in the past and have not dealt with accountability in their past contract very meaningfully. So I would take that with a slight grain of salt, since SPOG tends to fight accountability measures tooth and nail during contract negotiations.
Erica, why does it even matter what accountability is in here when this is a retroactive deal? It's 2021 to 2023, right?
Yeah, I mean, whatever accountability is included in any contract, or just whatever measures are included, mm-hmm. you know, going down to pay increases, it becomes the baseline for the next contract. And so by stripping out a bunch of accountability measures that were in the 2017 ordinance back in 2018, you know, SPOG, the police, can say, well, this is our baseline, and every mm-hmm. other aspect of that ordinance still has to be fought over. Mm-hmm. And so that's why we're sort of in this situation where, you know, there's dozens of things that were in that ordinance that were never really enacted. And so they're still being fought over to this day, 7 years later, and I think will continue to be so in the future. So I think it's very important.
That makes sense, because, you know, classic procedure in union negotiations is you're basing it off of what was the last contract. What are we adding? What are we taking away? You're not saying, well, in our contract 10 years ago, we had this. You work off of the most recent version. What else is there to know about this deal?
Well, I think that there is a sense in the city right now, broadly, that that we need to hire more police officers. There's been a real sort of reversal from 2020, when there were discussions about replacing some of the police budget with more community-based solutions to community safety. And we've really gone very far away from that. And so I think that the police really have a lot of leverage right now, particularly on this question of pay. I think the city council, you know, which does not have a seat formally at the negotiating table, but I think that they are going to be very eager to pass this this contract into law. And I think going forward, what will be interesting to see is whether, in fact, these very large raises are enough to recruit more potential officers, and what kind of officers are coming to the Seattle Police Department. Because one of the mm-hmm. problems with SPD, you know, as we've seen in a lot of KUOW zone reporting, is that there is a culture that is, you know, not perceived as welcoming to large swaths of the population, including women. Mm-hmm. And so will more money fix that problem? I mean, not directly. So it remains to be seen whether the city will take that issue seriously and try to actually fix the culture, as opposed to just sort of throwing more money at the problem.
So all this is happening as the city is dealing with a huge budget hole. The city already knows that it's needing to find places to cut or make more revenue. And this contract has a lot of retroactive pay in place. How is this going to affect the city's budget or other city workers?
Well, the city has not provided an estimate for how much this will cost, but you know, I've done some very dumb back of the napkin math, and it's definitely in the tens of millions.
Wow! And
so, I mean, you're talking, you know, 23% pay increases for you know, 1,000+ people. And those are going to be distributed in lump sum checks, essentially. So that's all going to hit, you know, this year or next year, depending on sort of when they get around to making these payments. There's a question about when that's going to happen that I wrote about this week on Publicola, but it's going to be a lot of money all at once that the city is going to have to find somewhere.
Yeah. Erica C. Barnett, editor and publisher of Publicola, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Seattle Now. And extra thanks to the listeners who donate to support the show. Today's episode was produced by Caroline Chamberlain Gomez. It was edited by Claire McGrain. Our production team also includes Vaughn Jones, Andy Hurst, and Patricia Murphy. Greg Kramer does our theme music. Seattle Now and KUOW Public Radio are members of the NPR Network. I'm Paige Browning. See you later.
Seattle in the 90s. A tidal wave of iconic music roars out of this sleepy city and launches a pop culture revolution. Here's a story you haven't heard. Let the Kids Dance is a new podcast about the rise and fall of Seattle's teen dance ordinance, the law that made it illegal for young people to go to concerts. A story of moral panic, grassroots activism, and an unstoppable music community that fought for its freedom. Listen to Let the Kids Dance from KUOW and the NPR Network.